Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. And I am joined once again by Mr. John Syracusa. Hello, John. How are you?
I'm excited to talk about my first episode of Enterprise. My first episode of Enterprise on this program, anyway.
Oh, have you watched any episodes of Enterprise on your own?
I have, and I think a large portion of the discussion of this episode will be meta-commentary about the show.
I'm very excited. So before we get into that, we should tell people who you are, and who better than John Syracusa to tell people who John Syracusa is?
Oh, who am I? Who am I now? I'm having an identity crisis. Yeah, I am a podcaster now, believe it or not. That's what I have to say my profession is, because I quit my regular job to just do podcasting. But now I do a tech podcast called Accidental Tech Podcast, and I do a bunch of other podcasts about things that are not tech. And that's what I do with my time. And apparently I also appear on this episode to talk, this podcast, to talk about Star Trek.
You do, intermittently. I imagine this has less impact on your income stream than the other podcasts. At least I hope it does, because otherwise...
I'll tell you when the big fat check arrives.
Well, yeah, please let me know, because I will also like a piece of that check. Well, okay. How are you enjoying your life as a professional podcaster, or a full-time professional podcaster? Because I feel like in my book, if you make any money from podcasting, you're a professional podcaster.
Yeah, I mean, I was doing all the same stuff before when I had my regular job. So in some respects, it is... less stressful because I'm not trying to do a million things at once. But in other respects, it's more stressful because it's hard to make money podcasting. I'm not sure if you know that.
I do know that. It's been harder than it's ever been, I think, to make money
podcasting. It's a lot easier just collecting a paycheck from a regular job. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's, I was thinking about this the other day, not this particular context, but one of the things that I'm good at kind of showing up and talking about stuff, but I'm not good at the motivation to make it happen. And I feel like being a full-time podcaster, you need to be pretty good at motivating yourself to make it happen.
Well, you also have to show up.
Well, so yes, it's
80% of life is just showing up.
It's true. Because I was thinking to myself, fans of Random Trek will know that Random Trek's publishing schedule is not as consistent as one would like for podcasting success. I know it's true. And I thought to myself, if I had a producer who would schedule these things for me, it would be so much easier for me. But also hard to make money. So if you start adding staff members to a thing that isn't making much money, the math doesn't work out.
This is what children are for. You just got a few more years.
Oh, well, then I'll have too little executive producers. But
they have to work for you for free. We called it chores when I was a kid, but it could be podcast producing for this generation.
This is brilliant. And it'll be an invaluable work experience for them that they can put on their resumes.
Or at least they'll talk to their therapist about it later in life and write it in their memoirs.
Oh, I'm sure they will. I'm sure they will. But speaking of therapy, why don't we talk about Star Trek Enterprise? Or actually, I think they don't. It's just Enterprise. They dropped the Star Trek to be cool with the kids. So you said before that this is not your first episode of Star Trek Enterprise, which I'm surprised by. So tell me, how did you start watching Enterprise? Why did you start watching?
I think you'll be less surprised when I tell you that this was my second episode of Enterprise.
Okay.
I watched what I believe was the first episode, and you'll be able to tell me in 2 seconds. It was the episode where they had to use the decontamination gel.
Yes.
Is that episode one?
I believe that is episode one.
So the sexy Vulcan lady rubs decontamination gel on the captain and vice versa. And after I watched that episode, I decided the show wasn't for me. And so that is the only episode I had ever watched until I saw this one.
Oh, boy. That is, I think, a low point in Star Trek, is that decontamination gel scene. Sadly, I didn't care for it then. I don't care for it now.
Was that episode one? Season one, episode one?
I believe so. People will write in if not, but I think it was.
I was going to rely on your encyclopedic knowledge of Enterprise, well, but now if you don't know this, I don't know where we're going to go.
Enterprise, I will say, is my least favorite series of Star Trek for a number of reasons that I have extolled on multiple podcasts, of multiple episodes of this podcast. And I think many of the reasons show up in this episode that we watched, which is Enterprise season 4, which is the best season of Enterprise, but not this episode. Episode 10, Daedalus, which is a great title for the episode, and it ties into a lot of the themes that they're doing in the episode. I'm not sure if the episode is very good, but it is interesting. So it starts with the most interesting thing about it is we get to meet the person who invented the transporters. Now, what I like about Enterprise is that it has this kind of, you know, well, it's kind of weird because it's an HD and it's fictional. So they don't, you know, one of the things some people complain about Discovery is how come Discovery looks so much better than the original series if it was supposed to happen around the same time, or Strange New Worlds. And this is because, you know, it's a modern TV show, so it's not going to look like, you know, a 1960s TV show. Same for Enterprise. But I like the way that they design things, and I think it looks plausible. And the people just don't trust the transporter, which it feels right to me. And of course, Dr. McCoy famously did not trust the transporters. And we get to meet the person who created the transporter, so that's fun.
But you think that works? Because that is the thing I know about Star Trek and the, you know, not trusting the transporter or whatever. But, like, this is way before that. Enterprise is way before that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I guess I don't know because I didn't see the series except for episode 1. Do they not trust the transporter in Enterprise?
They do not. They All very right. rarely use the transporter in Enterprise.
Okay, well, that makes sense. I was wondering if they used it routinely, and then all of a sudden some superstition crept in around the McCoy era or something. Although, speaking of this being in season 4, like, when I saw this was a season, you know, a later season episode, I'm like, well, this is going to give me the best chance because presumably the show, like, found its feet and got better. Mm-hmm. And you're telling me that this was a good season, but I concur that it was not evidenced in this episode.
Now, I will say it's the best season of Enterprise. I'm not sure if it's a good season of television, but it was a good season of Enterprise, mostly because, so I have many issues with Enterprise, but one of the biggest issues is that it was kind of like, we want to be a Star Trek show, but we want to be the cool Star Trek show that isn't into Star Trek. So we'll do non-Star Trekky things like rub decontamination gel over scantily clad people. And then in season 4, Manny Coto became the showrunner and basically said, we're a Star Trek show. Let's do Star Trek stuff and embrace being Star Trek. And so there are a number of really good episodes in season 4 because I think they basically were like, we know it's our last season. Let's just be the Star Trekiest Star Trek we can be.
I mean, yeah, like this, an episode where you meet the person who invented the transporter, and Zefram Cochran gets whatever his name is gets name dropped. Mm-hmm. That's very Star Trekky.
It is very Star Trekky, and this is the first time that the person who invented the transporters is mentioned in Star Trek, and his name is Emery Erickson, who is, you know, people in Star Trek, these geniuses, technical geniuses in Star Trek, seem to be tortured and often show up with ulterior motives. And I will say it becomes very clear almost immediately that Emery Erickson has arrived on the Enterprise to test a new subspace transporter. But it is very clear from the beginning that he is not. He's up to something else other than that.
So he arrives with his daughter in tow, mm-hmm. and I believe that the captain is there to greet them. And the very first note I have in this episode is, obviously they've met each other. The captain knows these people before, so they're not strangers. So it's like, oh, nice to see you again, inventor guy's daughter. And he greets her in the transporter, and he kisses her on the lips. Not on the cheek. He kisses her on the lips.
He does. It's kind of weird, especially since they say that they kind of grew up together. And in a later scene,
yes,
he says, you know, I know, Danica, it's hard for you to take advice from the kid who the guy who mm-hmm. chased you around the backyard as a kid.
But not hard to receive a kiss on the lips. Not a romantic kiss on the lips, a casual kiss on the lips, but a kiss on the lips nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's Scott Bakula. Who doesn't want to get kissed on the lips by Scott Bakula? That's the question you really should be asking.
This is the fun part of doing a random track. You get dropped into a little thing, and I'm trying to back solve, like, do they have a relationship in the series?
They don't.
I have that same question later about some other people, but, like, I guess they don't. You're telling me that mm-hmm. these two do not have a relationship?
Well, according to the episode, this is the only episode she appears in. They are childhood friends, but
yeah.
I don't know why they're kissing on the transporter pads, but I mean, she's an attractive woman, but that doesn't mean you don't go around kissing attractive women on the lips
like
without
is that like the greeting? You know, like in Europe, they do the two kiss on both cheeks or whatever, and we don't really do that here. But I don't know, maybe in the future, it's kissing lips. And by the way, like after the scene, the second note I have is, since we're talking about Enterprise, I mean, I'm sure when I saw that episode number one, I saw this, but apparently I had blocked it out. When the theme song plays, the theme song. You know, I've heard people complain about it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, people don't like this theme song. And now I see why. And then at the end, they said theme song by Diane Warren.
Yes.
She wrote so many hits.
Mm-hmm.
This is not.
Including this one.
This is not one of them. Performed by Russell Watson. I mostly blame Russell Watson, I guess, because not and feeling it.
This is season four. They, well, Enterprise historians will tell me. I'm pretty sure season four, they replaced the theme song, same theme song, but they made a jazzier, more upbeat version of it. So this is the jazzed up version of it. But yeah, it's not good.
No.
But it is, and I will say, since I often don't have much praise for Enterprise, I will trot out one of my kind of tried and true praises of it. I dislike the theme song, but I really like the title sequence. I think it tells a very nice story of, you know, humanity's charting through space, learning how to fly, all that good stuff. So I'm a big fan of that. Less so the song that's over it.
Yeah, I see what they're going for with the intro, and I agree. The song, bad, but the intro, like, I see what they're going for. And there's an anime series whose name I never know how to pronounce, but it's like the word planet with ES at the end. Planetes? I don't know if it's planets in a different language. Anyway, it has basically the same intro sequence where it's an animated, like cel-shaded hand-drawn animated series. Mm-hmm. And it shows, like, you know, a rocket development from the very first rockets to space things, whatever. You know, it does the same thing. It's a much better song. And that works. And I'm did they pull the I recognize like the ship with the first warp drive, like it's mm-hmm. like a rocket, but then the warp nacelles come out from it. Was that CG pulled from like First Contact or whatever that movie was, or do they do that fresh for the show?
I'm pretty sure they just pulled it, because that's a long running Star Trek tradition of just reusing the same special effects over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of surprised. I'm like, oh, I recognize that ship. Like, I recognize it as that's the first ship with the warp drive in it, because mm-hmm. it was, you know, cool that it's a transition between rockets, a nice transition between rockets and ridiculous Star Trek ships that have warp nacelles just because they look cool.
They do look cool. They look very cool. And so now we're in the meat of the episode. So now you must have many questions, because there are lots of strange things are happening in this episode. Well, not particularly, but there are interpersonal things. So there's T'Pol, who is our Vulcan first officer, and Trip, or Tucker, who is the Southern engineer guy, who is a big fan of Emery Erickson, and Emery Erickson, not a huge fan of him. But I don't think it has anything to do with him. It's just that Emery is there for a particular reason. And the other thing I want to say, so Emery Erickson is in a wheelchair, and I have nothing, there's no problem with that, but I did wonder, wouldn't he have a more futuristic wheelchair?
Mm-hmm. He wanted to be floating.
Exactly, or something, because he has trouble getting around. Like, the ADA apparently hasn't reached the Enterprise.
Yeah,
he can't get anywhere, and so he has to have Trip, like, help him do stuff. Just didn't seem like a good idea.
I did like that at multiple times because he can stand up. It's just very tiring and difficult for him. So at multiple times he's like, no, I want to do this myself. I got to get up out of my chair and, mm-hmm. you know, stand and
slide the slider.
I mean, that's, you know, they're kind of this show is kind of constrained by TOS to be like, okay, well, what do they do in TOS? They move the slider. Well, I guess we're going to be doing that or something less, more, even more primitive.
So he's there. T'Pol has gone through. So one of the themes of this episode is loss, right? Loss of family members. And so we find out that T'Pol's mother has recently died, and Tucker is trying to console her, and she is not interested in being consoled because she's a Vulcan. And one of the things that annoys me about Enterprise is the fact that T'Pol has been on the ship for 4 years, and all of her human counterparts seem to have very little interest in learning anything about her Vulcan culture. And so they don't know anything about, like, she's reading a book, the Kir Shara or something like that. And Tucker has no idea what it is. And it's like, couldn't you do a little research into this person that you're interested in?
They don't have computers where they can look that up. So she's just 100% Vulcan, right? She's not half human like Spock.
Correct. She is 100% Vulcan.
Yeah. So I don't, the Star Trek that I know does not, I mean, because Spock is such a large looming presence in the Vulcan thing and this whole half human struggle thing, right? You see pure Vulcans, but very often they're played off against Spock as like, okay, well, Spock has that little bit of humanity and there's a conflict, and the regular Vulcans are basically bigger dicks, I guess we should say, like that. Yeah. they're more straight up the middle, but it's still in the Star Trek lore, is still that it's not that the Vulcans don't feel things, they actually do feel things very deeply. It's just a question of how they deal with and control them. And her mm-hmm. performance of like, I've just lost my mother, I'm reading this important book and trying to get over it, she wasn't doing the Spock thing where it's like, I'm half human and I'm struggling, but I felt like she was showing more emotion than your average straight up Vulcan in Star Trek, especially around that dude. And it made me wonder, was there like a romantic thing between those two earlier in the season?
Yes. So they have a storied relationship together. And I think Tucker would like to continue that. And I think T'Pol is concentrating on other things, getting in touch with her Vulcanness and figuring out what it means to be a Vulcan. And she's also been on this ship surrounded by humans, and she's had, you know, she's had a lot of trials and tribulations. And she's probably, there are a couple of characters that I really like, an Enterprise, and T'Pol is one of them. The other one is Dr. Phlox, who we is very briefly in this. But he has a very good scene with T'Pol, so it's always nice to see two aliens have a scene together on a Star Trek show. But anyway, so they're sad. She's, her mother is dead, so she's sad. I say that very dismissively, but that's a sad thing. And Tucker's like, oh yes, I lost someone too. So you, in the one of the first several episodes, I think, he loses his sister Elizabeth to an alien attack. So everybody's losing people left and right. And then this comes to what I think is the most hilarious scene in this entire show, which is all of them sitting around a tiny table having dinner. I don't know why the table is so small, but it made me laugh every time they showed a cut of everyone sitting around that little table. It made me laugh. And this is where we find out why Emery is apparently there to test his transporters.
Yeah, this is budget cuts, maybe. That's the only thing I think of is like, okay, so this is a later season. Is this the last season as well?
Yep.
All right, so I'm like, maybe at this point they're not giving them the big budgets anymore, because you think about this episode, there's, you know, a couple of CG shots of the ship that they probably reused through the whole series, and the whole rest of it takes place indoors in about three different rooms. So not a lot of money up on the screen in this particular episode. And in that one, they're sitting there around the table having a discussion, which I would say is a Star Trek staple, but yeah, that does look cramped. And then I thought the audio was really bad. Like, it was a couple of places where I thought the ADR was off, like the, you know, where they had them re-record their lines and it didn't match. And then the audio in that dinner scene sounded like all echoey and stuff. So it's like, this is not the A-team, and this is not the big budget, right? But that, you know, whatever, you can get by with that. But right away with all these people talking, so there's our hero, what's his face, Scott Bakula,
Captain Archer,
and he's kind of a staple in, if you're watching television for a long time, he's a kind of a known quantity. There's T'Pol, who I thought that actor, she's pretty good as well. There is the Southern engineer guy, was fine. and then there's the transporter inventor, who is not a good actor. That really hurt this episode, because he's like one of the main characters. He's not mm-hmm. good at acting, and it really, really shows.
Well, you could read that as a performance choice, because he is tortured by, so it doesn't, you, if you're listening to this episode, I'm going to assume that you've watched this episode. So he's not really there to test a new transporter. He is there to try and save his son, who he, basically beamed to nowhere, and he thinks that he's still out there somewhere, and they need to be in this particular realm, the Barrens, because that's where they tested this previous transporter, and he wants to save him, right? Because he's there, and there's some curvature of subspace or something. You know, it doesn't really matter, but his signal is still there, so he's there. Emery is there to use the Enterprise to try to get his son back. And so he's tortured by this, and he's lying to Archer, who is he's known his entire life, apparently, Archer's entire life. And so you could say, and he feels bad because he's dragged his daughter out into this and somebody dies later. So, but it's not the strongest performance.
Yeah, it's not that he's bad at acting, and his character is bad at acting. Like, this character has to lie to the crew. It's the actor is bad.
I know what you're saying.
Like when he reads his lines later, it's just like, can we do another take of that? Like, one more? Like, it was like high school, play level of acting at various points, which is just a shame. I don't understand why they couldn't, just do a few more takes or find someone else, because that person really has to carry this episode. And it has these sort of television show level of subterfuge of like where he's arguing with the engineer about, I'll install it myself. No, there's nothing suspicious about it. And the engineer tries to insist like, well, no, it's my ship. I'm going to do everything. And then the guy basically pulls rank on him and says, well, now here in the script, it says that I've been given the authority to blah, 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 blah. So go screw yourself. And that resolves. But I feel like the engineer is so cautiously saying, I think there might be something up. I'm like, is this your best, most perceptive person here? It's obvious something. But although I did like this, so there's two things I liked in this. So the first is, I'm not sure if this is the first or only time they did this in Star Trek, but it's a well-known trope, the whole philosophical implications of the transporter. If your molecules are disassembled in one place and reassembled elsewhere,
yeah, I like that part.
Still the same person, right? Mm-hmm. And they have that right in the script of this episode. They don't dwell on it, but it's fun to see, fan memes find their way in and basically get swatted away as silly in the midst of the show. And then the other thing is, what he pretends he's there for is the Star Trek franchise destroying technology of essentially being able to transport you everywhere. Because the whole show is like, Navy battles in space. And if you don't need to fly anywhere in a ship, that kills the whole show. People would just transport from planet to planet. No one would ever be in a spaceship. Photon torpedoes would never be fired. Like, we'd have to go back to like Earth-based atmosphere combat for the battle scenes. Mm-hmm. And so that's not going to work, because Star Trek will never allow that technology to be successful.
It's true. And Captain Archer is none too pleased. He makes a couple of comments about, you're trying to put us out of business. Mm-hmm. And Emery's like, yes, wouldn't it be better? But yeah, and I did particularly like that scene where he talked about, he first invented the transporters and there were protests and people were talking about if it's a copy of you and not really you and all this nonsense. I enjoyed that. And I do think that the daughter, the actress who plays the daughter, who I don't know her name, but I think she does a good job of playing this, because she, it's clear that she is kind of limiting her own life to help care for her father, who is ailing, and she has to do these injections, and he's obsessed with, bringing back his son and kind of ignoring that his daughter is there. And, it's kind of a well-worn but very true kind of trope in, the person that's there every day helping you is overlooked as you are trying to get the person who isn't there to either pay attention to you or whatever, or in this case, save him from the transporter-based hell that your father accidentally put you in. So that all worked for me. And I think she does a pretty good job of being kind of tortured and being like, well, that's dad. And then when they kill a crew member, she's like, maybe we shouldn't do this anymore. And he's like, you don't know what you're talking about. And we find out that she probably wanted to be in Starfleet, but she couldn't, because she has to take care of her father. And Archer's like, I'm surprised you never, I haven't seen you out here. And she's like, well, I'm taking care of dad. He's like, okay, whatever. And we'll get to this, but Archer is an interesting character. And so where else? Oh, and then this is when, so right after that scene where you talk about how Emery very suspiciously doesn't let Trip install a seemingly mundane item into the transporter, we cut to the armory. And Lieutenant Malcolm Reed, who is one of our main characters, who is very, I think this might be his only scene in this episode, and some random ensign we've never met before, the lights go out. And I'm not sure if I missed something, because the lights go out and then they immediately grab weapons and start looking for things, which seemed like a weird reaction. Maybe they heard something and I didn't hear it or something.
They're scared of the dark. I mean, it doesn't take much to get the phasers out. anything unexpected happens, the phasers come out.
And they did come out. And they find this weird kind of undulating orb-ish thing And it kills the ensign that we've never seen before and we will never see again by deforming
kills him
his
in a
face.
Bloodless Star Trek kind of way where he puts his hands up to his face and falls to the ground. And later we look at him and he's declared dead without any medical person around. It's like
he's got his face has been like swirled, which is never good. Can't be good for you.
Yeah, I mean, I was reminded at various points in this episode that the main Star Trek go-to makeup technology, the same technology that's used to make people's foreheads weird, is universally applicable. You can apply it to people's faces, not on their forehead. You can apply it to their hands. You can apply it to the inventor guy's back. If you need rumpled skin on any surface, Star Trek is there for you.
It's true. It is omnipresent and versatile. And so they now everyone's like, oh no, what are these anomalies coming from? And they say, hey, Emery, have you ever seen any anomalies like this in your many, many years in the Barrens? And he very unconvincingly says, no, I don't know what you're talking about.
And speak of swirling flesh and his encountering this in the past, are we supposed to think that he encountered this swirly force in the past and that's why his back looks like that? Or is that just supposed to be an unrelated swirly back?
I think it is supposed to be related, but they never say, because later T'Pol's hand becomes swirly, although that seems to get fixed up with
that. She's going to be on the show, so.
Exactly. She needs her hand back.
Put that appliance on in every scene she's in.
Dr. Phlox is very good at his job. But that was what they didn't come out and say it, but I'm pretty sure, like, in his testing, that must have happened.
Right.
Because we also learn that he, not only did he invent the transporter, but he was the first person to use the transporter, because he says, you know, I invented the darn thing. I wanted to be the first person. And that inspired his son to want to be the first person to use his subspace transporter, which we learn doesn't work.
But he wasn't the first living thing, because they didn't talk about animal tests, too. So he's not, you know,
yes,
reckless.
They probably sent a few dogs and monkeys and one imagines countless animals sacrifice themselves for the transporter technology.
That's the thing about Star Trek, like in my mind now, that, you know, even though I saw TOS when I was a kid in reruns and was excited when TNG came out because there's going to be new Star Trek, at this point, TNG looms so large in my mental conception of Star Trek that I have trouble thinking about Star Trek that wasn't the utopian, we don't have money and everybody loves each other, ostensible fantasy world of TNG. But Enterprise is definitely not that. Like, I mean, those protests, they you know, hand-waved over them, but, like, I would imagine that people would be very angry about that. They're not in a land where everybody loves each other, and you can get anything you want, and there's no money, and material possessions mean nothing, and there's peace, and everybody, you know, is accepted. Like that's not any Star Trek series except TNG, right? And, of course, TNG is not really like that. They just use that as a supposed backdrop, and then they just make people do all the things they always do.
Well, I mean, without conflict, it's just boring. First season of TNG. But yes. And so this is when, now T'Pol has a twisted hand. Archer says they take T'Pol to the sick bay, and she is more interested in looking at her tricorder than the doctor fixing her hand. And she took visual records. And so they do the slow motion and enhance.
She actually says, someone actually says enhance.
Yes.
With an exclamation point. And it works.
Yes. And then he even enhances it further. And we find there's somebody in that spatial anomaly. Not only is it somebody, it is Quinn, Emery's son, who was also Captain Archer's best friend. And so Captain Archer is like, I recognize who that is. So now I must go talk to Emery, who has obviously been lying to me and has been, you know, super obvious to everybody except for the people on the ship other than Emery. So he goes and confronts Emery, and Emery very quickly caves in and says, it is true. I lied to Starfleet. I lied to you. Subspace transporters, never going to work. Doesn't work now. Yeah, never
don't worry,
will
your
work.
Franchise is safe. It's never going to work.
That's right.
We'll talk about it, 100, 200, 400 years from now. We'll still be talking about it, but it'll never work.
And I am here to save Quinn, because Quinn, you know, inspired by my past antics, wanted to be the first person to try this new transporter, and it screwed him up, and we've lost him. But I know he's still out there, and I can bring him home. This is the point at which I question Captain Archer's judgment. Because Captain Archer basically says, okay, I'll help you, even though this puts my ship and crew at great risk because we don't really know what's going on, or if Quinn is even alive. And we've already, someone has already died, and my first officer's hand is already messed up, but it'll be fine.
Is this the one where he has the big shouting match with the engineer who is pushing back against it?
Yes.
Yeah, so this I there have been, episodes of other Star Trek series where the captain wants to do something for personal reasons and justifies it to his crew, either using like rationalizations or an appeal to emotion or whatever. Like each captain has their own way of doing it, but I feel like Captain Archer was not given the enough time in the script to do that. So I wrote down what he said. This is what he gets in the script, and he has to read these lines, and he does, and it's just weak. So he basically says, "I made a decision, and it's the right decision, and the discussion is over. Can you accept that? Now go do your job." That's the outline of what needs to be said in this scene, but he just literally read the outline. It's the bullet points. I've made a decision. It's the right decision. No more discussion. Can you accept it? Go. That's the whole scene. I'm like, Captain Archer, is that are you inspiring your team through leadership here? That's like it's basically like he was my friend growing up. Even though I've never mentioned him for four seasons, he totally was my best friend. And so I want to try to get him back too. But like in the end, no one is surprised, obviously, because if the captain doesn't do it and say, okay, well, it's too dangerous, like everyone watching Star Trek will be like, you wimpy captain. Well, you're just going to go back home? That's not an episode. You have to make it an episode. So, and plus, you've already lost one crew member from the Phantom CG thingy or whatever. You might as well try to help them. What's the worst can happen? You lose another red shirt?
Yeah, we don't care about these red shirts. I will say, so he does say it's the right decision. And I thought to myself, is it the right decision, Captain Archer?
That's his argument. His argument is it's the I made a decision, and that decision is right for reasons I will not discuss. The discussion is over, in case you're wondering. And he does ask in a nice way, "Can you accept that?" And hopefully, the guy doesn't say no.
I would have said no, which is why I guess I'm not in Starfleet. Also,
No,
Starfleet doesn't exist, but
military usually doesn't ask, "Can you accept that?" after giving orders. Just
that's true.
FYI.
It's usually not a choice. That's why I did briefly consider joining the military when I was a wee lad, and then I thought about it. And I thought, I'm not great at taking orders, and that's kind of fundamental to the whole military structure, so it
Well,
probably
that's
won't work
fine.
out
I
well.
mean, a lot of people going to the military aren't great at taking orders, but they can fix that.
And I didn't think it was a problem that needed to be fixed. So I thought maybe I'll choose a different life path.
Well, you could always join Starfleet. It seems pretty loosey-goosey on the whole orders thing.
It's true. I think Starfleet fits better with me as well. Although it seems very dangerous. Everything is very dangerous. And so Trip does, in fact, do his job because Captain Archer told him to. So he runs off to help Emery. And this is perhaps one of my favorite parts in this episode is when he's helping Emery, and Emery's like, "You don't seem to like me anymore." And Trip is like, "No, I don't. Did you prefer it when I worshipped you?"
He's like, yeah, I
And he
kind
said,
of did.
"Yes, I did." It
Again,
was better.
that's kind of like the outlines of what that scene should be about, but don't just have the characters say it. Like you can show, don't tell.
There's a lot of telling in this episode. Although this Porthos, we get Porthos, hooray! So Captain Archer has a dog. That dog's name is Porthos, and Porthos is the cutest thing in Enterprise. And Danica visits Archer, meets Porthos, and there is a unneeded scene of Porthos being super cute. But we all need Porthos being super cute. And she just basically, I think that scene really is just to have Porthos in it. And Archer and Danica talk about, gee, wouldn't it be great to get your brother back? Which I guess would be nice. And oh, and then there are a lot of kind of extraneous scenes at this point where in engineering and T'Pol and Tucker are there and they're talking about how to help, with the transporter modifications. And Tucker tells her he wants to bring back movie night and if she wants to watch a horror movie or a musical. And she's basically like, "I don't want to watch anything. I am, trying to get in touch with my Vulcan self."
Yeah, in this scene, this again, I didn't know that they were past a relationship, but I can kind of tell that they were trying to say they had kind of a past relationship. But in this scene, does she basically like, I don't know if they're already split up or whatever, but it seems like as part of this conversation and this plot thread that she's just like, whatever relationship we had before that you think is on hold because my mom died, it's not coming back. So we can be friends, but that's it. Is that the subtext of this exchange? He takes it pretty well. I've just basically been like, yeah, we're not. That's not going to happen again.
Well, you know, there are only so many people on the Enterprise.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And I guess you have to, you know, you have to work together.
And what did they say her mom died from? Was it some kind of incurable Vulcan disease?
Yes. So I don't remember. I know T'Pol had the same disease, and she's been cured somehow. I don't remember how.
Character magic.
Exactly. And her mother died of it. And yeah, I don't remember. It's a plot in different episodes, and I don't remember the details. But yes, she died of, one assumes, some kind of neurological disease, because that's what they always give Vulcans, because then they can't control their emotions and bad things happen.
So this is another thing where you see this show trying to do the thing that most good Star Trek shows do, is have, or most good modern Star Trek shows do, is have some kind of arc that spans multiple episodes while still having episodic content. And so this episode does have these very awkwardly inserted, let us now take one small step forward in the T'Pol's mom is dead thread and in the engineer and T'Pol romance thread, right? But they're not particularly tied in to the rest of the episode that is going on at all. Like the people who are writing the show had never seen a modern television show and learned how you can have multi-episode arcs weaved into and incorporated with and bouncing off of the main story. That doesn't happen here.
Well, this was early. This is in 2005, so we're still trying to figure out how these things work.
I mean, they did on the X-Files. That was, they could have copied off that. Like, it just, like, normally what you have, like, so, like, to give an example, she said because her mom died. It's a perfect opportunity for her grief over her mom to be incorporated into the idea of the inventor guy's grief over his son. Mm-hmm. But they never really connect those dots or talk about them together.
There were broad strokes that I think it was left as an exercise to the viewer to connect them. But I think you're right. They were trying to show all this loss. And so Trip has someone he's lost. T'Pol has lost someone. He, Danica and Emery have lost someone, obviously. And we find out Archer, best friend. So there's all this kind of loss that's kind of stewing in this episode. But they don't really, it's a theme, but it's very lightly themed because they don't connect it to the story.
The other thing that modern shows will do is they would have at least some of the characters resolve or progress on their journey because of the events of the thing. So, for example, there could be some pivotal scene in which there's some dramatic thing happening and the inventor doesn't want to let his son go. But then T'Pol has to, you know, shouting over machinery exploding, convince him to let his son go. And by convincing him to let his son go, she lets her mother go. Like that type of thing. Right? That's what you would expect from a more modern show. But this show doesn't know how to do that yet. So it has the similarity of the scenes among the threads, but it doesn't use them to progress each other. Right. T'Pol does not learn anything about herself, really, from this events happening that she's barely involved with anyway, other than getting her hand weirded up.
And then she's there for the resolution, I suppose. But before we get to that, we see, so they try to bring him back. Quinn is the him in that. And Archer and Emery are in Launch Bay 1, apparently, according to Memory Alpha. And they do whatever it is to make the disturbance appear, and it does. And what could have been, and I think, John, this is to your point of the actor who played Emery, perhaps not being up to the task or the script just not being very good. This could have been a very affecting scene where he's talking, because we see kind of flickers of Quinn and his father is talking to him and trying to get him back. And then it goes horribly wrong and Archer, you know, tackles him because he blows up an EPS conduit. But this scene doesn't particularly work well for me. I don't know if it does for you, but
yeah, I mean, they didn't have the budget left to even make him all mangled. So he comes back basically intact, but going to be dead within, seconds, as they establish. There's, you know, so the technical mumbo jumbo of, like, you know, he can't let him go and he wants to bring him back anyway. It would have been more affecting if, like, his refusal to let go causes him to bring him back and he's one of those mangled, you know, motion picture type blobs of flesh. And they didn't even take advantage of the fact that he was all perfect to have them have a conversation. They say like two words to each other and then the son dies. So
yeah, it's pretty sad. And in multiple ways. And before that scene, there's another scene where Archer, like the distortion thing blows up the EPS conduits and nearly blows up some photon torpedoes. And Trip is like, I can't believe we're going to do this again. Mm-hmm. Archer, you almost blew up the whole ship. And Archer's like, ah, you're close to insubordination, mister. And once again, I thought, Archer, you're making the wrong decision. But it's his ship, so I guess he can do it. And that's what they do. They beam him back. And he dies. And we got to Paul. Dr. Phlox is scanning him and says basically he's undergone massive cellular degeneration and it is accelerating. And I don't, you know, detect any life signs. And they bring him back and he dies having a moment with Emery. And then Emery's like, well, he's dead. And
another one of those bloodless Star Trek deaths. Like you could, mm-hmm. you know, he's cellular degeneration, but outside he looks perfect. Blood doesn't ooze out of his eyeballs. His brains don't fall out of his ears. He doesn't turn into a puddle of goo. He doesn't even convulse. He's just kind of there. He says, dad. And then he's dead. Dad closes his eyes. And then very quickly, everyone's like, well, it was really bad not knowing whether he was alive or dead. So now we can all move on with our lives. Actually, it's kind of better that he's dead. I'm like, all right, geez, give it a day or two.
You know, everyone deals with grief in different ways. And this is also a weird scene where Emery is saying goodbye to Captain Archer. And he's like, yeah, so I lied to everybody. And Starfleet's not going to be happy. So I have to go back and, you know, face the music. But maybe they'll just let me teach somewhere. And I'm like, what? Let you teach somewhere.
Teach you how to misappropriate Starfleet resources for your own personal gain, experiment on your family members. It'll be great.
I thought that was very strange. Like, yeah, keep on dreaming, Emery. Although he does say, we skipped over this, but there was a good moment where he says, you know, basically, I was really young when I invented the transporter, and I've been trying to live up to that my entire life, and it's been very difficult. So, and that was another thing that kind of, not that I've ever done anything as momentous as that, but it is an understandable thing to have to deal with. And then we find out that T'Pol is cured of her disease, and Dr. Phlox tells her that she's doing very well, and she says, I feel like I'm, you know, just you know, coming apart at the seams. And he says, well, you're re-examining your core beliefs. That's something that most people never do, so you're ahead of everybody on that, basically. And I really like that scene because I like Dr. Phlox and I like T'Pol, and that was really their only scene together, so I liked it. And then this is where they basically put a pin on the whole relationship idea, where T'Pol goes to talk to Tucker and she basically says, it's complicated, I need some me time, so I have no time for any relationships. And Tucker says, well, at least my warp engines still need me.
He says, aw, shucks, that's what he says.
He kicks a stone.
Yeah, he seems like not as interesting a character as T'Pol or the captain.
There are a couple of characters. So Reed, who is hardly in this, is also kind of, he is the character that I often don't even remember is on the show, which is a problem. And then there's another one, Ensign Merriweather, who I don't think was in this episode at all, but he's like the navigator pilot of the ship. But yeah, not a great thing. So thus ends a finely named but poorly written episode of Star Trek Enterprise. What did you think of your second episode of Enterprise, John?
So I'm having trouble figuring out what the vibe of this show is, because based on episode one, it's like you were saying, like, we're going to be the cool Star Trek, or we're going to have sexy ladies and decontamination gel and Scott Bakula, and it's going to be a different kind of vibe, right? And I barely remember much about that episode, but definitely you could see where it was going. This episode just seemed like a much worse episode of TNG. Much, much, much worse episode of TNG. Because it was straight up Star Trek. People come on, they have conflicts, they do a thing, captain has to make a difficult decision, right? But every part of it was subpar from the, you know, the TNG standard. I'm like, so what is the vibe of this show? Is it just TNG but with worse characters and not very good lighting? I mean, like, I don't understand what they're going for. And so I guess with two data points, it's hard to tell. But yeah, this does not make me like Enterprise anymore. I mean, I guess I did appreciate that this felt like a straight up Star Trek episode, but it didn't feel like a good one.
That's because it wasn't a good one, but it is a straight up Star Trek episode. And I think that as the Enterprise seasons progressed, they got closer and closer to being Star
Cancellation.
Trek, and cancellation. Yes, it was only 4 seasons, but I think that was enough. But we'll see. And I say this all the time, but Enterprise is the show that manages to suck all the charm out of Scott Bakula, which I thought
Yeah.
was a task that could not be done, and yet Enterprise proves it over and over again.
Yeah, even in this one, he's like overacting in a couple of scenes, and I'm like, is he just not into this character? Like, I can't tell the character from one episode that I barely remember in this one, but like, I mean, it's hurt also by the fact that, I mean, Scott Bakula seems like smart-ish casting for this if you just see it on paper before you start watching the show, but you know, especially if 4 seasons in they're doing this, it's like at that point, like they should have just, you know, my. So did someone have the formula for Star Trek written on a secret piece of paper that they only found when they did Strange New Worlds? Which is not to say that every Star Trek series should be a retread of TOS, right? But that is a formula that works. And if this series was like, well, we tried something different, but that didn't work, so let's go back. But they didn't make it all the way back to, like, talking about Scott Bakula, Anson Mount is a better captain, like better casting, better. And it's not, I don't think it's an actor problem, but it's just like,
No.
the formula was there, and Enterprise is like, let's just go back to that. I guess they just never got there. I guess they were too saddled with the characters they had. They didn't have as good a casting. But you know, I get where they're coming from. It's like, we're, you know, let's not do what has been done before. Let's try something new. Everything Discovery does something similar, but Discovery, for all its insanity, never gives up on trying to be something different. And then Strange New Worlds is like, from frame one, we're doing plain old Star Trek, and that's good too. And then Enterprise just seems like, we're not sure what we're doing, but whatever we do, it's not working.
I think that sums up Enterprise in a nutshell. And I am not surprised that you were the person who could do that. Thank you so much, John, for joining me and talking about this episode of Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah. I think maybe next time we'll try a different show.
I make no promises.